Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
High atop the Milkpacking District in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all-important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
Steve Jobs steps down from Apple, a motel in Newburgh explodes, and a woman's breast implant ruptures when she's shot in the chest with a paintball.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed! Heed! Paid by you! For this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Don Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Thursday, August 25th, 2011. An early morning explosion at a Best Western motel in Newburgh sent one man to the hospital by life flight and a woman and a child to the hospital by ambulance. The 3 a.m. blast forced about 123 motel guests at 2211 Portland Road to evacuate into the parking lot. The cause of the blast remains under investigation. There was speculation that drugs may have been involved, but the presence of a meth lab has been ruled out. A hazmat crew was part of the emergency response, but only to check air quality to allow guests to re-enter the building, gather their possessions, and then check out.
You don't really think of your hotels as typically being one of your more explodey nouns.
No, and Best Western. Best Western is a brand that you think you can trust to be explosion-free.
The worst Western, Don.
Yeah.
The worst Western imaginable.
Explodiest Western. The man was found in the hallway with critical burn injuries. He was not breathing on his own. The condition of the two-year-old and the woman was not known. Guests said that there was a dog in a cage in the room at the time of the explosion, and it was, I guess it's okay. They don't say. They just say there was a dog in a cage. They say, what happened to the dog?
You can figure out the rest on your own.
Guests displaced by the explosion were asked to stay out of their rooms. School buses were brought to the motel for them, which I guess they're going to be sleeping in now. It doesn't say that they took them anywhere. The motel's sprinkler system had put out any flames before fire crews arrived. Inspectors were on site checking the structural integrity of the building. And one fellow who was staying across the hall from the room that exploded said he came out and saw the ceiling blown down and a man in tatters. He said, there was just a lot of confusion about what was going on.
I don't think that staying out of your rooms is going to be a problem for most of those Best Western patrons in the future. That would just be my estimation of the situation.
And to be honest, they may think twice before going to a Best Western again, because apparently they explode.
That's what I was alluding to when I said staying out of their rooms in the future.
Well, I know, but I thought you meant like Okay, okay.
I appreciate you underscoring the humor. Good. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. It is Thursday, August 25th, 2011. Thank you for joining us. Coming up later on this hour, you get your entertainment news, also science on the march. And next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program at rickemersonshow.com. That is all headed your way, including various other stories of comedy and information in a surprising confluence. Not that surprising, actually. Don't forget, if you want to download this program later on the day, you can do it directly here at Cascadia.fm, or you can get it as an iTunes download. You can also take it with you in your mobile device if you like. That is mobile.cascadia.fm, mobile.cascadia.fm. Here is Don Taylor.
Do we have audio for things yet, or
for things?
Things and stuff, and
well, for things
for items of interest.
Maybe. What items specifically? Are you
thinking? I don't know.
Of?
Well, I was going to read the Steve Jobs story, but I thought perhaps you.
I don't have any audio on the Steve Jobs thing quite yet. I am looking for that. You'll have some hurricane news and some Howard Schultz news here in a moment, though, audio wise.
Well, then we will move on to something else that's local. First off. Martial arts training helped a Portland man defend his home against an unwelcome visitor. The attempted break-in happened early Wednesday morning in the Lintz neighborhood of southeast Portland. Joe Silverson went outside to investigate a crashing sound on his porch, and then a man outside tried to attack him. Silverson said, "I made sure I was controlling his arms so he couldn't hurt me and I couldn't hurt him. I knew there was something wrong with him, so I really didn't want to hurt him. I just wanted to keep him still until the cops arrived." Silverson works as a mental health technician at a local hospital, and he's spent 13 years learning Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
Awesome.
And so he used some of that training to subdue the man. He said, "I walked out." Oh, his girlfriend said, "I walked out, I looked down, and I see this gentleman pinned to the ground. John had his knee in him. He had his arm pulled back behind his neck." Portland police took the man, later identified as Leon Gustavo, to detox. They said he was high on paint thinner that he had been huffing. No charges have been filed.
So he's sort of this guy's kind of the Hoist Gracie of the Lentz medical field. Just puts a guy on the ground without questions.
Exactly.
Just crab locks him without any hesitation at all, Don, is what he does.
And paint huffer guy Gustavo apparently just picked the wrong house to go screaming and crashing around at.
Also, the idea, when you talk about there being a Lentz neighborhood, a neighborhood implies neighbors, and neighbors imply people that you sort of talk to or hang out with, or maybe you borrow a cup of sugar. In Lentz, there are just people that you did time with, or people that you will do time with at some point in the future, or guys that are going to help you, fence the goods once you've gotten them. I don't think neighbors really exist, like, in the traditional sense of the word in Lentz.
Ex-cons might borrow sugar from each other. It could happen.
Sure.
They could have a book club. Or a sewing circle, if you will.
I'm just saying, in Lentz, there's not really neighbors as we understand them, I think, in the rest of the world. I think it's just people you try to avoid. Let me hand you some...
Honestly, that is how I understand neighbors.
And then
that
big
is my relationship.
Pile of things on the printer that I'm assuming are yours.
Yeah, some of those are mine.
William Peterson and his wife have twins.
Yes, that would be for me.
Will Smith, Jada Pinkett.
Well, don't give,
separating.
Don't give away all of the exciting entertainment news ahead of time.
That's just the... Just making sure it was yours. They want to be giving away somebody else's news.
No, those are spoilers for our exciting entertainment section.
And I'll have some audio on the Steve Jobs thing toward the bottom of the hour.
Okay. Here. All right. A passenger who stuck his arm out of a car window lost a limb while the car tried to pass a tractor-trailer rig in Southern Oregon.
Fantastic.
But sideswiped it instead. The 33-year-old man was taken to OHSU in Portland on Tuesday for an attempt to reattach the arm, which was severed above the elbow. Hospital officials said they could report only that Ryan Smith of Sutherland was in fair condition. Police said the driver of the 1991 Toyota Camry, 35-year-old Richard Thacker, was jailed on charges that included assault, driving under the influence of a controlled substance, and driving with a suspended license. Ledbetter said it wasn't evident why Smith's arm was out the window, except that it was a hot day and the Toyota Camry had no air conditioning. He said troopers are still trying to determine what caused the accident on Highway 5. Lydia Warner, a registered nurse from Pennsylvania, came upon the accident and made a tourniquet from Smith's T-shirt. Her boyfriend, Ed Strong, retrieved the arm from the road.
I bet that her boyfriend, Ed Strong, is a really all-American kind of guy who looks kind of like Hoyt on True Blood. And is just, has a baseball cap, but not because he's a douche, just because that's what you do when a man works in the sun and occasionally needs to keep the elements off his face.
I wonder what kind of effect that has on a relationship, by the way. I imagine it would either strengthen it or be the last straw if you were already having problems. If you pull the car over and one of you has to be the one to go, I'll go get the guy's arm out of the road.
No, I think that keeps you together. That's a bond that can strengthen a couple.
Yeah.
So
Say, remember that time you had to go get that guy's arm out of the road? Yeah.
Let's get back on this business of him sticking his arm out of the car window because it had no air conditioning. That rings false to me because, A, this is 2011. Also, he's driving a Camry.
Yeah.
It had air conditioning.
Well, it's a 91 Camry.
I don't care. If it was an 01 Camry from 1901.
It could have been broken air conditioning.
That I may buy. I may buy that the car had air conditioning that was not functioning quite up to snuff. The idea that there was a Camry in 1991 without air conditioning, that does not wash with me. No,
Some
sir.
Some people just drive with their arms out of the window, though, too, because you see that.
Working on his partial tan.
Maybe. Maybe he was gesturing at the tractor trailer, and that's part of the problem.
But my thing is, like, how closely I don't know how you would drive close enough. Did you say that he himself hit the tractor, like the car
the tractor trailer? He was trying to pass it, and he sideswiped it instead.
Okay, so he did actually hit it with the car. In other words, the accident wasn't a result of his arm.
Yeah. Well, he was the passenger, apparently. So the guy who was driving is the fellow who was charged with assault, a DUI, and driving with a suspended license. So that guy was apparently driving like a maniac and tried to pass a tractor trailer and then sideswiped it while his buddy's arm was hanging out the window.
Okay, so this does make some more sense because I was thinking for some reason it was the driver who had his arm out the window and then...
Yeah, I was too, but no, the first one, a passenger. So it was the passenger.
All right.
Well, we misunderstood it first, I believe.
Somehow less impressive because I was thinking he was able to get close enough to clip off his arm without actually hitting the tractor trailer, but then said arm clipping is what resulted in the accident.
I have a feeling this might put some pressure on their friendship in the future.
Well, I suppose. Because, you know, one of them's constantly going to have to be doing the other one's fly.
Well, yeah. So, and you're always going to have that whole, no, you owe me arm. Remember, arm. So.
Yes, you can borrow $5 when I can play the piano again! That might be what he says. I'm speculating.
So apparently corporate America is angry at Washington. Earlier this month, Starbucks CEO Howard Schultz decided to stop all political campaign contributions until lawmakers halt what he calls partisan gridlock in Washington, D.C., and more than 100 CEOs have joined him. Schultz said that he foresees this campaign evolving.
I think this is just the beginning of what I think is going to be a groundswell of support to hold back contributions and at the same time to do everything we can not to wait for Washington but to stimulate the economy.
And so this is, read the description again of what it is he's doing, because I heard him talk about this morning and I couldn't quite put my finger on it.
He decided that his company, Starbucks, is not going to give any political campaign contributions at all.
To anyone.
Until lawmakers start actually working together a little bit and stop all the partisan jockeying. And he's encouraged CEOs of other corporations to do so. And so far, over 100 of them, have said that they'll do the same.
Bill Campbell, the chairman of Intuit, Tim Armstrong, the chairman and CEO of AOL, Mickey Drexler, the CEO of J.Crew, Walter Robb, the CEO of Whole Foods.
I like a guy named Mickey Drexler. Sounds like a guy who could get things done.
Yeah.
And the guy, like, if you really have a problem that nobody else is quite able to handle, Mickey Drexler is your guy.
He's also not the guy that you want to be told you have to go talk to.
You got to go talk to Mickey Drexler, not Mickey Drexler. All right. So the kind of the sticky part there is when he says that he's not going to donate any money or they're not going to donate money or contribute money to any campaign until they, you know, get their act together, which I guess could mean kind of whatever you... It would be better if he just said, like, ever again, you know, or for 10 years. Because otherwise it sounds like a little bit of weaseling. But here's the thing about Howard Schultz. As much as Starbucks makes terrible coffee, and they do, let's have no doubt about that. As much as their coffee is just awful, he himself is kind of a great guy. A lot of people dislike Starbucks for reasons that I've never been able to put my finger on. We have to like things that are small and dislike things that are big. Apparently, that's kind of the way it works. He has always seemed like a really great, savvy, good guy, though. So he reminds me a little bit of what's his name, Jeff Bezos from Amazon.
Yeah, I actually got to meet him when I worked at Starbucks because he had published a book called "Pour Your Heart Into It," how Starbucks did something or other, and it was a really terrific book. It was actually about how they created the business and how it grew, and his own business philosophies. A very interesting book. And he came around. He was actually in Portland doing some stuff, and he stopped by some of the stores, and I got to meet him briefly. I mean, you know, it wasn't like we sat down and hung out, but it was like, hey, that's Howard Schultz, and I said, hey, I just read your book, and that was like our whole interaction.
And he's made a note, Taylor, brown noser,
yes.
Fire. crush.
Keep an eye on that one.
Did you make a note that you were talking to a guy who could probably just buy and sell you and have you destroyed?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I was aware of that. That's always, we've talked about that. It's always strange when you meet somebody that you realize could probably just, like, pick up a phone and have you killed.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of, you know, and it's like, and then you kind of hope that he does that. I mean, that's how I would spend my time. I mean, you know, it's like Phil Knight was the same thing. It's like I spent 12 seconds talking to Phil Knight and I was just thinking, you know, you've probably just had men just destroyed since lunch today. I mean, just as like a sort of palate cleanser after you went out for, for whatever it is, you know, for your ham sandwich at lunch, you probably just, you know, just went through your book at random and like picked 5 or 6 lives to ruin. I would do that day in and day out.
Well, a woman's breast implant was apparently ruptured when she was shot in the chest while playing paintball. The 26-year-old was hit at close range during a game in Croydon, South London. Although she did not make a complaint at the time, she went to her doctor 2 days later, who told her the implant had been punctured. The woman, who has not been named, is now recovering at home following the alleged incident, which is thought to be the first of its kind in Britain. The company which runs the paintball center said they are now issuing extra padding to all women with breast implants. An extra line has been added to an indemnity form warning paintball players that there is risk that implants can be damaged. The woman only reported the incident after a day of paintballing on Saturday. A spokesman said she went to see her GP and he found she had a small puncture in the implant. She called the company's headquarters and told us what happened. There are no legal proceedings. A cosmetic surgeon said that the risk of an implant actually being ruptured by one of the pellets is very low. A spokesman for UK Paintball said the incident was a surprise, but they were taking steps to make sure it didn't happen again. Part of the fun of paintball is that it hurts a bit when you get shot, but in all the years we've been doing this, we've never seen an incident like this.
Well, all of the best things hurt. If you know it doesn't hurt, you're not doing it properly.
They also said, we want as many people to enjoy paintball as possible, regardless of whether their breasts are fake or real.
Regardless of whether or not your bosoms actually explode during the activity, we'd like to think that it's a satisfying day of enjoyment for the entire family.
So he says, so that's why we are now providing additional padding around the chest region to any surgically enhanced female participants.
Sounds like she had some extra padding around the chest region, Don. Hey-o!
So I guess you have to actually own up to that then when you go play paintball. You have to walk in and say, oh, by the way, these are fake.
Yes.
And so could I get the special boob protectors?
I Rick Emerson doesn't typically, we don't work blue here, but I do have to pass along that somebody made a humorous observation by noting that this was clearly not a case of tough titty, Don.
No.
At all.
No, in fact, quite the opposite.
Quite the opposite.
Yes.
Here's a question that I have, though, and that nobody's really been able to satisfactorily answer, which is that if you pay for your breast implants on a credit card and then you decide you opt out of paying the rest, you didn't ever pay that off, that's not a thing where they can just come and repo those, is it?
Probably not.
I mean, they'll take a couch away from you. But, I mean, what do they do for that? I mean, if you pay for something on, like, an installment plan and then you quit paying, a guy comes and he takes your Jaguar in the middle of the night. What do they do for your... What if your bosoms? If you don't pay the rest of the plan,
I don't know. They ought to take them.
But
back.
Doesn't it seem like logically that's how we deal with things that people haven't paid off?
Or they should have some kind of a system where they can, by remote control, they can just deflate them, if you haven't paid on time.
Or just inflate one and not the other.
Right.
Or
the longer you take to pay, you know, they just start going down and down. Then you make a payment and like maybe they go back up again.
Now, if you don't make the payments, they should just go up and down in size comically, you know, like really quickly. You know, like while you're trying to make a present. And so you can see figure 5 shows the lending average. And then suddenly you look down and you're half Dolly, half Twiggy.
And somebody goes, oh, you didn't make your payment, did you?
Susan, there's a little something going on in your shirt there. It's unnerving everybody.
A memorial service is planned for a Michigan wing walker who fell to his death while performing an aerial stunt during a show at Selfridge Air National Guard Base in Michigan. The International Council of Air Shows said the service for 48-year-old Todd Green of Ann Arbor will take place at 1 p.m. today at American Legion Post 117 in Manchester, Michigan. Details about a memorial fund in Green's memory are expected to be released later. Federal authorities are investigating Sunday's accident in which Green tried to grab a helicopter's skid from his perch atop a small plane over Harrison Township, about 20 miles northeast of Detroit. Scores of people saw him fall about 200 feet and land 1,500 feet from the crowd.
Did he land in front of horrified onlookers?
He did, indeed.
Did children scream?
Children scream, the donkey cried.
Wonderful. Fantastic. So they're trying to figure out, what is it they're investigating, do you suppose? We still have gravity and everything.
I don't know.
He was on the wing of a plane, right?
Yeah, and he was walking on it.
I think I may have sussed the problem. I think I may have seen the flaw in his plan.
It doesn't seem like it's got to be a terribly intensive investigation.
No.
Maybe a two-part question. Really.
I think he should have to forfeit the title ground. Wing walker. He's more of a dirt hitter.
Yeah, wing tripper.
Yes,
really. The Portland mayor and police chief decided to step up training and remind officers about a code of conduct required of them following the investigation into an alleged road rage incident involving an off-duty police officer. A Portland police traffic captain has been transferred from his duties due to the reported road rage incident in Idaho. The Portland Police Bureau said in a prepared statement that while on vacation, Captain Todd Wyatt was involved in an off-duty incident while driving that involved another driver.
Captain Todd will beat your ass.
The Lieutenant Chris Schenk of the Idaho State Police said the investigation is ongoing. It was about 11 a.m. on August 13th in Post Falls, Idaho, when dispatchers received a call from an apparent road rage victim. It's unclear what led up to the incident. A man driving a blue pickup truck brandished a handgun toward the driver of a second vehicle. Both vehicles had at least one passenger. The pickup driver was pulled over in Spokane by Washington State Patrol. This was the seventh incident involving an off-duty police officer in the past 10 months. Four officers have been arrested for drunk driving, and two sergeants currently face allegations of off-duty road rage.
Well, they are supposed to represent the populace that they protect and patrol.
Dan Handelman with Portland Cop Watch, a watchdog group, says these road rage cases, some of the other things that officers have been doing off duty as well, it is troublesome. That's what he says. Says it's troublesome.
Well, it seems like somebody's going to have trouble getting cops to come to his house if he ever should be the victim of a crime.
Willamette Week profiled Wyatt in 2005. He's temporarily assigned to the Drugs and Vice Division while he's going on with this.
Did they irresistibly title it Bad Lieutenant?
No, I don't think so. All right. But this was, anyway, so there you go. Road rage, Idaho.
There you go. There's that.
Brandishing a gun.
I'm going to hand you this job step in two sections. So the top sheet is for Legion of News. The second sheet is for the Rick Emerson Show. So there you go. There's too much jobs news for just one show.
That's true.
We got to just spread it out a little bit. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for joining us today. It is Thursday. Bit my tongue there. It is Thursday, August 25th, 2011. Coming up later on this hour, you get your Science on the March, also entertainment news, and next hour, the Rick Emerson Radio Program at rickemersonshow.com. That is coming up next hour, where you can be amused for the low, low cost of just 32 cents a day. That is one quarter, one nickel, two pennies, or some other combination of coins. Perhaps a drachma. That is next hour at Rick Emerson Show.
How about washers? Do we take washers?
No, we don't take slugs. We don't take washers.
Stamps? Can you pay in stamps?
Well, green stamps, yes. Mm. Not like forever stamps. No, screw that. Mm. Forever stamp means we can't raise it to 34 cents.
Yeah.
Which we plan on doing. Mm. We don't.
Yeah. Apple's legendary co-founder and top ideas man, Steve Jobs, resigned as chief executive Wednesday in a long-expected move after he began a dramatic fight with cancer. In a written statement, Apple, the world's second biggest company by market capitalization, announced that chief operating officer Tim Cook would take over as CEO, but that Jobs would stay on as chairman of the board. Board member Art Levinson said in a statement, Jobs' extraordinary vision and leadership saved Apple and guided it to its position as the world's most innovative and valuable technology company. No reason was given for Jobs' resignation, but his health problems, including a lengthy medical leave for a liver transplant in 2009, as in his increasingly gaunt appearances at public events, fueled speculation he would have to give up the everyday running of the company that he co-founded in 1976. Molly Wood, executive director of editor of CNET, says his replacement will have some big shoes to fill.
Tim Cook is definitely not the next Steve Jobs. He is, if anything, the guy who has Steve Jobs' playbook, and he's gonna do exactly what is in that playbook for the short term.
It really is the best of times, worst of times, if you're Tim Cook, though, because it's like you get the gig, and then immediately everybody goes, oh, okay. Like, you can't, there's no celebrating. There's no, like, you go home and you crack open a bottle of champagne. I'm not the next Steve Jobs. Here's to me. You know, and it's, you know, I mean, really, it's like you were the guy who is every day a reminder of the worst news the company could possibly have. I mean, you know, that you hi, everybody. Hey, I'd like to just take a moment to rally the troops and remind you once again, Steve's gone. Gone, yeah. Me instead. That's who you get, me.
And basically his entire, the first thing he did was just reassure everybody that he's not changing anything. He has no ideas. He says, you know, I want you to be confident Apple's not going to change. I cherish and celebrate Apple's unique principles and values. Basically saying, I have no ideas of my own. I'm not going to do anything new.
It just, I mean...
Here I am.
That is the worst thing about being one of those guys. It's not the worst thing for Steve Jobs, but I mean, the worst thing about those guys is that they are... I really could go on and on. I will save the going on and on until next hour, probably, but because I've already had some conversations with people about this. But I mean, Steve Jobs is such an unlikely confluence of personality traits, especially in that industry, that you know you can't train someone to be what Steve Jobs is.
No,
you know that is. I'm not saying you can't hone those characteristics or those abilities. You know that you can't that people can't make themselves better at certain things, but there are just certain combinations of abilities and inclinations that cannot be trained. And when you get them in just the right combination, they result in a Steve Jobs or an Howard Schultz, for that matter. And especially for a guy who is so personally closely identified with the with the company. But we have I think we have one more here, and the next hour we have a lot more on the Steve Jobs thing.
This iTunes fan says he hates to see Jobs go.
By the way, the one that I did not, the sound clip that I did not put in here, because it just seemed too ridiculous. I mean, and it sounded dangerously like the Leave Britney Alone guy, was a guy who was he was an Apple user, as am I. So don't feel here that I'm piling on. I am in the glassiest of houses. But he was an Apple user, and he was speaking through sort of, I think, what he believed to be manly tears, but tears nonetheless. And he did Steve Jobs is Apple. And it was just, and it really, you just expected him to be in a tight-fitting T-shirt, on a YouTube screen, screaming about the Baby One More Time video.
I admire him, and I'm sad to hear that he stepped down.
See, there you go. This was it was more even-keeled.
So. Yeah, that was really
No. Next hour, we'll have several more little bits of sound about the Steve Jobs.
So. Okay. Let's do our science news.
Here is your science on the march for, let's see, what is today? Today is Thursday, yes?
Yes.
Fantastic. Thursday, August 25th. 2011, brought to you by Squires Electric. You can find them at squireselectric.com. You can also find them at facebook.com/squireselectric. Or if you want, you can call them at 503-252-1609. That is the number if you please, or if you don't please. 503-252-1609 or squireselectric.com. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business or in your robot, they are the company to call about that. They can make sure that everything is installed correctly the first time around. They can make sure that everything, like if the last guy who lived there was just a... just a tool and just did everything wrong, they can come fix that. If you've taken over a building, let's say someone else's misfortune has become your windfall and that you have callously evicted someone from the building and you are going to be taking it over and putting your own thriving empire in there. You want to make sure that it's wired for your business and that everything is going to work properly. You're not going to turn on a switch and fizzle out everything in the wall. You call Squires Electric at 503-252-1609 and they will take care of that for you. Tell me you heard it here at Legion of News, part of the Emerson News Network. If you would please, they are proud sponsors of this, your Science on the March.
The storied, supersized claw of the male fiddler crab, a weapon of war and a lure in love, appears also to serve the prosaic function of keeping the male crabs from cooking themselves while they're out in the sand fighting and flirting. Male fiddler crabs grow one claw so large that waving it around is an athletic event, and eating with it is basically impossible. Researchers from the University of Texas at Austin studied heat transfer in natural and declawed crabs of the species. The experiments, which were reported in the September American Naturalist, show that the monster claw may help in thermoregulation by radiating heat away from the crab during long stints on the sand. So, giant claw.
Monster claw.
Monster claw. Thermoregulation. In the film The Matrix, a world-spanning machine civilization uses humans as batteries to power itself. The machines might have done better to allow people to walk around, as that would be a far better way to generate energy for electronics. This idea was hatched by Tom Kripenkin and J. Ashley Taylor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Kripenkin, a professor of mechanical engineering, describes in a recent Nature Communications paper an energy harvesting technology known as reverse electrowetting, a phenomenon discovered by the two researchers. The mechanical energy is converted to electrical energy by using a microfluidic device consisting of thousands of liquid microdroplets interacting with a nanostructured substrate. Basically, it means you could put a layer into the sole of a shoe, similar to the liquid-filled layers in some high-end sneakers, and convert the mechanical energy of walking to electricity, then transmit that to a device such as a phone. It wouldn't replace batteries, but it would extend their lives quite a bit. While solar power is also an option for some electronics, sometimes there isn't any sunlight, and the wattage that a small solar panel can generate is usually enough for something like a calculator, but not a smartphone.
Why can't we just run everything off potatoes?
I think we probably could.
I mean, have you seen that clock where it, like, runs off a potato?
Yeah.
I mean, can't we just get a lot of those?
Or just, you think one potato might be enough for your phone?
I mean, can't we just...
Just make phones out of potatoes.
Take over some place that doesn't matter, like Ireland, and just take their potatoes? I mean, seriously,
we have lots of potatoes here.
Yeah, I mean, we're eating those. I mean, you know.
Well, we don't have to eat all of them. We could make them into phones.
I'm just saying, but I don't have to choose between phone and French fry, Don, is what I'm saying. So if we just colonize some place that's got the potatoes, you know,
are you afraid of their own. Are you afraid we would run out of French fry potatoes if we started using
them? Well, but then the thing is, if we're just using the potatoes from here, then it's like Idaho becomes a world power, and that can't happen.
No.
That cannot be allowed.
No. So they have a lot of, like, KKK people there?
Yeah.
Yeah, see, that would be bad.
Yeah, no, that's like the South rising again, but next door.
By the way, I dropped a photo in the Dropbox, a picture that can show you how this foot thing would work. Kripergen says the amount of energy humans can generate this way is actually quite large. A sprinter puts out nearly a kilowatt, and even walking along, someone could generate about 20 watts, which is enough to top off an average cell phone battery. The power could be transmitted wirelessly. And this could be very useful, they say, in military operations. They could put it in soldiers' boots and cut back on the number of batteries that soldiers have to carry. Right now, soldiers have to walk around with about 20 pounds worth of batteries to power various electronic devices, such as night vision goggles, laptops, and GPS units.
Which is ridiculous, because it seems like every place we're invading is really sunny.
Yeah.
So I don't understand why it is that... Why are we not able to just go, you know, if we're in Iraq, it seems like it's very bright there most of the time.
Also, you'd think they could grow potatoes.
Or, you know, again, just, well, yeah, there's that, too.
I mean, potatoes grow underground. Why couldn't you grow them in the desert?
Well, I don't think they grow in sand. I don't think anything grows in sand.
Oh, maybe not. Okay. It's a census time again, but not for people. This census estimated the number of species on Earth. 8,704,000 I don't know, some kind of species that have cells with nuclei and other membranes, which means bacteria and other simple organisms were excluded from the count. I don't know how you pronounce the word.
I speak for eukaryote. For everyone here when I say what?
Well, they've counted the amount of species that there are on Earth, excluding bacteria and other simple organisms. And the number is 8,704,000. Species of animals on Earth.
Okay.
It looks like that, but 86% of all land-dwelling species and 91% in the water, they say, have yet to be discovered and cataloged by science.
Okay, who sees the logical flaw with that statement?
Well, yeah, that's an estimate from the Census of Marine Life. I don't know how they could possibly estimate that. How do you estimate that you haven't discovered 91% of something?
Because that presumes you know the final number.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, that's made up. Yeah, they're just...
I don't even know how you'd begin to. I mean, I suppose they figure the ocean is full of, the volume of water is X, and so far they know about so many animals, therefore there must be all these other ones that are filling in the extra spaces. But it still seems sort of a ridiculous estimate.
I don't even really know that works, because that presumes that there's some sort of constant for the number of creatures that must be in any given space, which is also... Here's what they're doing. They're just saying that, and then when someone says, well, that doesn't make any sense, they go, well, prove it's not right.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. There are 1.2 million species officially registered in the Catalog of Life and the World Register of Marine Species. The researchers discovered numerical relationships between the higher levels of taxonomic division, like order and phylum, and the number of species. Using these patterns, they were able to make more realistic estimate of species numbers than previous guesses. According to this census they did, animals make up 7.77 million species, plants 298,000 species. There's 611,000 species of fungi and 36,400 species of protozoa. So there you go.
The catalog of life, that's the follow-up to getting the Adam and Eve catalog.
I think that's the next number. Earlier this month, an experimental electric vehicle dubbed the Schluckspect, which is German for boozer, set the record for the longest drive achieved by an electric vehicle on a single battery charge. Designed by a team of developers at Offenburg University of Applied Sciences, the Schluckspect E traveled for 36 hours and 12 minutes. Four drivers worked in shifts, piloting the vehicle at just over 28 miles per hour. The record was set at the Bosch corporate test track in Boxburg, Germany. Team Schluckspect's achievement is largely due to ultralight chassis design, replacing the car's base plate with a lighter frame developed at the Fraunhofer Institute. The one-seat vehicle has two wheel-mounted hub motors and is powered by 14 individual lithium cobalt battery packs. With no engine or transmission, developers were able to keep the Schluckspect E slim, aerodynamic, and light. The car got its name because one of the team's first gasoline prototypes was a gas guzzler, they said, so they called it the Boozer.
That's what passes for humor in Germany.
Yeah. Ulrich Hochberg, one of the project's leaders, said, "The first car we built was really a heavy drinker. We ran out of fuel before the finish line."
Are you bon voyage?
I don't know. I suddenly realized after about the third word into that that I had no idea how to do a German accent.
No.
So now it's called the Schluckspect, and Hochberg chuckled, "It's really become now a brand name."
Nothing from Germany that sounds German ever becomes a brand name, because you just have to hack spit all over every people when you know. What's it called? It's called the Heikentrucker. Anyway,
that's all the science.
All right, there you go. There's your Science on the March for Thursday, brought to you by Squires Electric. You can find them at squireselectric.com, or you can call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business or in your Tin Lizzie, perhaps, they can make your life easier. They are Squires Electric. Coming up later on this hour, you got your entertainment news next hour at the Rick Emerson Radio Program at rickemersonshow.com.
A Pennsylvania man claiming to have a bomb demanded money from a bank teller in Sugarloaf Township, Pennsylvania, on Monday, only to return it minutes later. Otto C. McNabb Jr. was arraigned by Magisterial District Judge Ronald Swank on Monday evening. McNabb entered the bank about 12:15 p.m. Monday and told the teller, "I have a bomb. Give me the money or I'm going to set it off." He left the bank with $2,262 and returned to his vehicle where his girlfriend was waiting. Unaware McNabb planned to rob the bank, his girlfriend then yelled at him, so he returned the money to the bank and left the parking lot. Using a description of the vehicle, police located McNabb in the area of State Route 309 in Butler Township. They took McNabb into custody after stopping him as he pulled into his driveway.
Wait, so she wasn't privy to the whole plan?
No, and then he came back and said, "Look, honey, I got all this money. I robbed the bank."
Did what?
Yeah. You take that back right now.
Okay. Otto McNabb, you are not keeping that money.
There is an awesome photograph of him being led away, by the way, by the police, looking terribly, terribly ashamed of himself.
You can see this if you go to rickemerson.com/pictures, visual aids for August 25th. And it's like you can almost, I don't know that this is the case, but you can almost imagine that he's looking back past the cop as he's being led away, and he's looking to his girlfriend in the car going, "But baby, I thought I was going to buy you something shiny. Damn you. Don't wait for me."
He actually looks like there's a stand-up comedian, Doug something, who does a lot of stoner humor. Doug Benson, is that his name?
Sure.
And he looks a lot like him, only like if somebody'd blown him up with an air hose.
And then handcuffed him.
Anyway, yes, McNabb told reporters as he was being escorted away by police, he said, "Times are tough. You got to do what you have to do to support your family." He's charged with robbery, theft by unlawful taking, receiving stolen property, and terroristic threats. His girlfriend will not face charges. By the way, in early February, McNabb told police he had sustained a gunshot wound to his arm after a man busted in through the kitchen door at his home in a robbery. McNabb told reporters a few days after the robbery he was scuffling with the man when the gun fired and struck him in the arm. The suspects in that robbery were never located.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So,
I'm intrigued by the idea that there is a law against, quote, unlawful taking.
Unlawful taking.
How is that different from stealing?
It's not stealing. Well, he did bring it back. So maybe that's the thing. He took it, but then he brought it back. So really, it was only taking. If he had kept it, it would be stealing.
Unlawful keeping is the two halves together equal stealing.
Yes, okay. Exactly.
All right.
Park officials in Clackamas are working to restore a wetlands area where an illegal BMX track was set up, causing serious damage to the pristine nature area. North Clackamas Park and Recreation officials said they were concerned about environmental effects on the area near the Clackamas Aquatic Center. Officials said it appeared a lot of effort had gone into building the track, which was hidden deep inside the 89-acre nature park. The BMX trail had been carved out of the countryside, complete with berms and jumps that stretched across 4 acres, destroying native plants, some old-growth trees, and much more. Thomas Burns with Park and Rec said, "The soil erodes and gets into the creek system. It creates a problem for wildlife in creeks, and it creates a problem for water quality." Nature resource workers did their best to restore the area to its natural state. They said it will take years before the area will come back to its original condition. Authorities discovered the rogue BMX trail last May, but have not been able to track down who built it. It was not the first unsanctioned bike trail found in the Portland area. BMXers built a similar one near Rocky Butte in northeast Portland, and authorities also discovered an illegal mountain bike trail carved into Forest Park last year. Bob Hyders, who owns Clackamas Cycle World, said he condemns illegal trails, but these problems clearly show that there's a need for more sanctioned ones. He said if we give them someplace to go ride, they wouldn't be destroying the places they shouldn't be.
You don't really think of your BMXers typically as being a problem-causing people.
No.
It doesn't really seem like that. Like that's a rogue element of the population that you have to keep an eye on.
I'm also impressed that they had the wherewithal to get out there and actually create trails and build something, because they generally seem like people that just, you know, ride their bikes and then, I don't know.
Go to appear in Honeycomb ads?
Yes. That was it. And Mountain Dew.
Okay.
Mountain Dew commercials is what they're doing when they're not riding their bikes.
No, to commercials for Surge.
Anything that's extreme, really.
Just sit around wearing knit caps all the time, waiting for the X Games.
Hoping that Gus Van Sant needs extras.
Yeah. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Don't forget you can get this program later on today. Yes, today, here at Cascadia.fm as a direct MP3 download. You can also get it via iTunes or at LegionNews.com. Next hour, the Rick Emerson Radio program will be at RickEmersonShow.com.
FEMA is getting ready to put relief supplies into position in order to get ready for whatever Hurricane Irene brings this weekend. President Obama, that would be President Barack Obama, got a telephone briefing today on the preparations, and spokesman Josh Earnest said the president does not intend to cut short his Martha's Vineyard vacation.
You know, the president of the United States is responsible for fulfilling his responsibilities as the president of the United States, regardless of where he is, regardless of where he goes. You know, the president is fulfilling those responsibilities and is committed to ensuring that everything that needs to be done to prepare for this is being done.
This is a spokesman for who?
For FEMA.
Okay. So it sounds a lot like he's...
Or for the president.
Sounds like he's bucking for the job of spokesman for the president, because he's doing a really great job of going that... Oh, wait, I mean, he's not on vacation. I mean, he's still doing stuff, you know? I mean, he's got a phone.
Yeah. I guess he does work for the president. Also, if you're the president and you want a guy speaking to the public, you want a guy named Josh Earnest.
Totally.
FEMA Administrator Craig Fugatti said they're already putting relief supplies into position.
Don't wait till you get hit to find out what you're going to need. We start moving stuff before the storm gets here, and that's one of the things that Congress recognized after Katrina, that FEMA needed to have the authority and resources to do that.
If you could have anybody, any celebrity, be your spokesperson to go out, you know, behind a podium and talk to the people on your behalf, who would it be?
Any celebrity?
Out and stand behind a podium and, like, you know, presidential spokesperson, so-and-so, you know, Don Taylor spokesperson, blah, 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 had this to say, and then it's any celebrity of your choice.
Well, this Justin Timberlake.
Really?
Yeah, because I think he seems very sincere.
Okay.
I believe people would believe anything he said.
Well, see, on that tip, I always go Morgan Freeman.
Yeah. By the way, I was watching something on Discovery, and it was some kind of an animal nature thing, and I couldn't figure out what it was. I don't remember what it was, but the voiceover guy, the narrator, it took me about 20 minutes to realize it was Anthony LaPaglia.
Mm-hmm.
But then I realized it was Anthony LaPaglia doing his American accent.
That's interesting.
Anthony LaPaglia is Australian.
That's funny. I wonder if they hired him, but they realized they hired the wrong guy.
He came in and he was speaking with this Australian. Oh, we don't want you to sound like that.
We were getting the guy from The Breakfast Club. Oh. Can you do an American accent?
Anthony, can you Can you sound like a teenager from Chicago? That'd be great. Just do it all as that.
That's wonderful.
We want you to sound like you sound when you're playing a cop, not when you're, you.
That's interesting that they just saw the guy and they went, yeah, get him. But they saw him, like, in character.
Yeah.
All right, then.
Let's do entertainment news.
Here is your entertainment news. By the way, it is 12:43 Pacific time in case you have to, be somewhere later, and you don't want to be, you don't want to be late. Don't want to be tardy. Here is your entertainment news for Thursday, August 25th, 2011.
Esther Gordy Edwards, who helped build Motown Records alongside her brother Barry Gordy Jr. and led efforts to turn its original Detroit headquarters into a museum, has died. She was 91.
What, is God killing all of the Motown people in 1 week?
Yes. Yes, they are. All the Motown people are going down in
Jesus. Flint. Rockwell, run for cover.
Edwards died Wednesday, surrounded by family and friends in Detroit, according to the Motown Historical Museum. Edwards was a Motown executive for nearly three decades, holding numerous leadership positions within the music company, whose artists included Stevie Wonder, Smokey Robinson and the Miracles, The Supremes, Marvin Gaye, The Temptations, and The Four Tops. Motown Records, which Berry Gordy started with a family loan in 1959, churned out scores of global hits from the building it dubbed Hitsville, USA. Edwards served as senior vice president, corporate secretary, and director of Motown International Operations, where she was charged with exposing the famed Motown sound to international audiences. A memorial for Real Housewives of Beverly Hills star Russell Armstrong, who committed suicide August 15th, was held in Los Angeles Wednesday. Estranged wife Taylor Armstrong attended the service, as well as Real Housewives star Lisa Vanderpump. Her name was Vanderpump.
Vanderpump.
Kyle Richards and Adrian Maloof. According to Russell's attorney, Russell's ashes will be divided between Taylor and his family in Texas. Taylor has indicated to Russell's nephew that Russell's family can take most of the remains back to Texas. He told People they have a family cemetery then. Just leave me a piece of him. You can have most of it. Just leave me a hunk.
And a pinky.
Jason Bateman and his wife, Amanda Anka, will soon add a second daughter to their family. The news was confirmed by singer Paul Anka, who is Amanda's father, in a Canadian interview.
Really?
Yes, Jason Bateman is married to Paul Anka's daughter.
Okay, I didn't know that.
I didn't either. The 42-year-old star and his wife have a 4-year-old daughter named Francesca Nora.
Is that all one word, or is that like end of
no,
first,
it's two words.
First name and middle name?
Middle name is Nora.
All right, okay.
Sarah Gilbert, star of Roseanne and co-host and co-creator of CBS's The Talk, has ended her 10-year relationship with TV producer Allison Adler. She's a producer of Chuck. Gilbert, 36, and Adler, 44, will share custody of their children, son Levi, 6, and daughter Sawyer, 4. A rep for Gilbert says the separation is completely amicable.
This is who?
Sarah Gilbert.
Oh, okay. My brain, I did an autocomplete in my head, and I think we're talking about Melissa Gilbert.
No, this is Melissa Gilbert's
from
sister.
From Roseanne.
Yeah, this is her sister.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, I had no idea. This whole time, I had no idea they were related.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Redmond O'Neill, the 26-year-old son of Ryan O'Neill and Farrah Fawcett, pleaded no contest to felony gun and heroin possession in Los Angeles Wednesday. A judge sentenced O'Neill to rehab for 1 year, allowing him to avoid jail time. We're pleased and grateful that a judge gave Redmond further treatment rather than incarceration, his attorney said in a statement. His history of addiction warrants this approach. O'Neill was arrested earlier this month after police found drugs in his car. He's also been placed on probation for an additional 5 years. Former CSI star William Peterson and his wife Gina Cerrone had a twin daughter and son on July 5th through a surrogate. The 58-year-old actor's newborns were delivered prematurely but are doing great and improving in every way, according to the couple. Peterson also has a 36-year-old daughter with two sons of her own. Wow.
Okay.
Apparently, Will Smith and Jada Pinkett Smith are not separating.
What is that raise of the
hand? I
don't
know why that's news that somebody's not breaking up.
Well, it's news because they don't ever comment on their personal life is the deal. That's what makes the story isn't that they're not breaking up. The story is that they actually commented on it at all because to their credit, I think. Because think about it, you never see for. I mean, I don't know if he's still the world's most bankable star, but he is. He's got to be in the top 10 still. Yeah. Probably in the top 5. He's certainly, I would say, in the top three most bankable stars in the U.S., and yet you never see Will Smith on the cover of tabloids. You never see him talked about. He is, I think, there probably of all of the stars I can think of in Hollywood currently operating, except for guys who have been there for, you know, decades and decades, like a Clint Eastwood type or whatever, there is probably the biggest gap between his box office success and his media presence and the amount of coverage he receives from tabloids of anybody in Hollywood. And that's because he goes out to, I think to his credit, they go out of their way to keep their family, like, out of the news.
Yes, and I guess there are, I mean, I don't really follow the tabloids, so I guess there have been rumors. And they released a statement saying, although we are reluctant to respond to these types of press reports, the rumors circulating about our relationship are completely false. We are still together and our marriage is intact. They have two children, Jaden, 13, and Willow, 10. Smith also has a son, Trey, from a previous relationship, who tweeted earlier today that the breakup news was false.
Yeah, so I think that's the story, is that they actually were prompted to comment on it at all.
And finally, Keith Richards has gone platinum as an author. The Rolling Stones memoir Life has sold more than 1 million copies since coming out last fall. Little Brown and Company publisher Michael Peach said in a statement Thursday, and this is a quote, "Hail to the Keith," noting that Life was among the best-selling rock memoirs of all time. The 67-year-old Richards received more than $7 million for his book, which received almost universal rave.
It is fantastic, by the way. I finished that about a month and a half ago, and it is really, really, really good. Did I play the thing of where he just, where on the audiobook where he does the strange, like, Jamaican woman accent?
Yes.
Yeah, it's
yes,
awesome.
You did.
But I actually have the full hardcover copy book as well, and it really is just, it's just fantastic. Because so many times it's like rock memoir. I can't remember the last time I read a rock autobiography or memoir of any kind that wasn't just, I read two back-to-back that were really good, and that was the Patti Smith one, Just Kids, which is amazing, and the Keith one, which is great in an entirely different way. But before that, like, I can't remember the last time I read a rock autobiography that was not just self-serving, like, doggerel. I mean, it's just they're just such useless crap most of the time, even from people you like. I mean, I read Slash's, which is pointless. I guess Steven Tyler's is probably okay, except I get the sense I probably heard most of those stories, already, because he's, you know, unlike Keith Richards, he's just very, Keith Richards is very sort of taciturn about everything, and he doesn't really talk a lot publicly about stuff, and Steven Tyler just can't shut up, and so you probably have heard all of his stories. But,
so if you could read a really good, really honest memoir from anybody who hasn't published one so far, who would you want to read?
Well, when you say an honest memoir, you mean one where I would get the actual inside story?
Well, you get as honest as somebody's going to be in something like that.
Does it have to be by them, or could it be about them?
Either one, I suppose.
If I could read an actual honest memoir in which I knew that I was getting the true story about a celebrity, it would be Michael Jackson.
That is interesting. Okay.
If I knew that it was the real deal. I mean, I don't want to read just some, you know, fiction, you know, about, you know, some whitewash or somebody's, you know, whatever. But if I knew I was getting the straight dope, I would say that Michael Jackson probably tops the list, followed by Elvis. I mean, as much as I'm not an Elvis fan, I mean, Elvis doesn't mean dick to me, But the thing about Elvis, is that is fascinating is the same thing that is fascinating about Michael Jackson, which is, leaving aside any issues of music or whatever, the thing that's fascinating about Elvis is that, you know, just the staggering, I mean, I think, like, inconceivable level of fame that he was given. I mean, really just the closest thing to deification that you could probably get, I mean, in the 20th century at least. And yet, I sort of take it as an article of faith. I take it as read that we will never, ever, ever, ever get an unvarnished, accurate history of what that guy's life was like, ever.
Yeah.
Because there's too much money at stake. And Priscilla Presley and whoever she hands it off to, the Tim Cook that takes over after her, you will never, ever, ever get the real story of what happened to Elvis. And so I'm interested in that just because it's like the D.B. Cooper thing. It's like you want to know what really, you know, because he had just the most astonishing, just jaw-dropping fall from grace, I think, probably of any pop star ever. You know, if you think about what Elvis was in 1956 and what he died as, I mean, the idea that he transitioned from one to the other, and that there's a million things we probably don't know about. I mean, you think about all the stories you hear about Elvis, just, you know, not leaving Graceland for months on end, and, you know, and going from 150 pounds to 500 pounds within like 6 months or something. But it's like it's all just smoke. Like, you'll never get the real story. So I would like to know the actual inside story with that.
And speaking of Elvis, by the way, today is the birthday of my favorite musician, Elvis Costello.
Is that true?
He is 57 years old.
Okay.
Happy birthday, Elvis Costello. And that's all the entertainment news.
All right, there you go. That is your entertainment news for Thursday right here at Legion of News. And don't forget the Rick Emerson radio program is coming up next hour at rickemersonshow.com. It is 12:54 on this Thursday. We got about 4 minutes worth of news. Don't forget, you can get this program later on the day via iTunes or by directly downloading it as an MP3 here at Cascadia.fm.
Sarah Palin is still denying that she's campaigning for a presidential nomination. And on Tuesday, she denied Karl Rove's prediction that she would jump into the race before a de facto September 3rd deadline. Any professional pundit claiming to have inside information regarding Governor Palin's personal decision is not only wrong, but their comments are specifically intended to mislead the American public, said an inside post on her Political Action Committee's website. While the short message did not mention Karl Rove by name, it was clear that he was the target. Meanwhile, Karl Rove shot back at Palin on Wednesday night, telling Fox News that the former Alaska governor needs to get a thicker skin regarding speculation about a potential presidential campaign. Rove said, "I'm mystified. Look, she's all upset about this, saying I'm somehow trying to sabotage her in some way. Look, if she doesn't want to be speculated about as a prospective presidential candidate, there's an easy way to end the speculation. Simply say, I'm not running." Rove stressed that he has no inside information regarding Palin's intention to join the race, but repeated his belief that her current schedule looks a whole lot like the start of a campaign. He said, "If she's not interested in being a candidate, why does she keep going back to Iowa?"
I bet you there's a lot of guys in high school who bought a lot of drinks for Sarah Palin and never got laid.
Yeah.
That would be my guess.
Yes. Police say an Arizona man stole several baby albino boa constrictors at a pet store by stuffing them in his shorts. Eric Flegel was arrested Tuesday after police reviewed surveillance footage from Predators Reptile Center in Mesa, Arizona. They say a July 30th video shows the 22-year-old man entered the store, removed several snakes from their cage, and placed them in the pocket of his shorts before exiting the store without paying. Police say Flegel then traveled to another pet store and traded several of the snakes for $175 and a large reptile tank. The Arizona Republic newspaper says a witness obtained a license plate number, which police used to locate Flegel. He was later identified by witnesses from a police lineup. A private college outside of Chicago has begun asking potential students about their sexual orientation in a move the school says is aimed at increasing campus diversity. The question on the application for those students hoping to attend Elmhurst College in the fall of 2012 reads, "Would you consider yourself to be a member of the LGBT, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender community?" The three multiple choice answers, yes, no, and prefer not to answer. According to the Chicago Sun-Times, the addition of the question to the school's application makes the college the first in the U.S. to ask potential students directly about their sexual orientation or gender identity. School officials say that, like questions about race or religion, the question is completely optional and will have no impact on an applicant's chances of admission. Still, those who answer
yes... Which is obviously a lie. If their goal is to increase diversity, then you cannot logically say that that will have nothing to do with what people put down on the questionnaire. That's just a lie. Those two statements cannot both be true. They are mutually exclusive. I don't care. I'm not going to school there. But that is illogical. To say that they are changing something that will have no impact. In other words, how can it be a change that has no change?
Well, yeah, because...
Or result.
Because if they don't have to answer it, but if they do answer yes, they could be eligible for a scholarship worth up to one-third of
which is an inducement to go to school.
Yeah.
That is an inducement to go to school, which, by the way, is aimed at increasing the amount of diversity or the amount of people that you get coming to you from one community or another. It doesn't matter to me. I'm just saying that is a lie when they say that there's not going to be. I mean, what's the actual phrasing they used?
They said, like questions about race or religion, the question is completely optional and will have no impact on an applicant's chances of admission.
Yeah. So they're saying that To say that they are changing something, but that they hope it has no effect at all, just seems that is illogical and patently unbelievable.
Well, yeah, because then immediately following that, the school's dean of admission says, increasing diversity is part of our mission statement.
Yes, yeah, so it's either your mission and your goal or it's not.
Yeah, which sounds like, therefore, you are seeking more LGBT students.
You know what it is, Don? It's hooey. That's what it is. All right. On that note, ladies and gentlefolk, we should do this, which is to bring down the curtain on another episode of Legion of News. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agle, chief of staff Cheryl Nakoa. As always, we thank you for listening. Don't forget the Rick Emerson Show's next hour at rickemersonshow.com. We will see you again tomorrow. That is Friday. So we will see you tomorrow at noon for another episode of Legion of News. Until then, have a safe and satisfying Thursday, won't you please?